Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to say thank you for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my podcast. Today is Thursday, June 1st, 2023. Well, since Memorial Day, the pools are officially open, and the temperatures reflect the fact that summer, even though it's not officially June 21st, but summer is here. I loved this season. I love the outdoor barbecues, the swimming, the camping, all of the things associated with summer. Cannot wait to get started next week. Vacation time for me. Woo, going to have some fun that week. Today on the broadcast, I want to cover two extremely important topics. Of course, with the intro, Uprising by Muse, you know I'm going to talk about the women's revolution in Iran. Going to talk about that specifically. And then after that, I want to merge into a very parallel subject about the Biden appeasement of Iran and how this is facilitating the war in Ukraine as well as empowering Iran with their ballistic missile program, and eventually the nuclear deal will come around again. I want to talk about the appeasement policies that's empowering the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. Now, of course, last September, with the tragic death of Mahsa Amini, and it's in my new book, Uprising, We Are the Revolution, I wrote her story, the women's revolution, woman life and freedom, became reality. And although you don't have the intensity as it was then, you still have uprising, you still have protests, and you still have things going on related to that initial movement that are horrific. And of course, recently, the poisoning of schoolgirls, which all of us human rights activists believe it's the government's revenge on young schoolgirls standing up to this evil regime. You had all of that begin in September of last year. Today on the broadcast, I want to feature a powerful interview from a dear friend. Her name is Nazanin Afshin Jam. She is an incredible woman, an incredible human rights activist for Iranians. Now, her parents brought her to Canada from Iran when she was just a baby, but she has never forgotten her roots. She has grown up to be a voice for all Iranians. She's Iranian-Canadian, and her platform a few years ago, which I think it still is her platform, was child executions. And Nazanin spoke so much publicly about the horrific practices of the Iranian regime putting to death young children that are not adults yet, and there is a covenant that they signed, an agreement that said that they would not have the death penalty for kids underage. Well, of course, they betray all of their covenants and agreements, and they have been putting to death young people before the age of 21, I guess. You could use that as an example, charging them with crimes and executing them. And that goes against their agreement not to use the death penalty against minors. That has been Nazanin's platform. Now, for a while, she was very busy raising a family. And then with the Woman, Life, and Freedom movement last September, she emerged from her busyness and has been on a steady plane of speaking out, of arranging rallies to be a voice for Iranian women to support this movement. Now, how do I know Nazanin? Well, Nazanin stood up and had a very strong response to the execution of Rahane Jabari back in 2014. She amassed together a petition of hundreds of thousands of people. She stood bravely, just like I did, behind Rahane. And, of course, tragically, Rahane was still executed. But Nazanin is a world-class human rights activist. She's former Miss Canada. And she's just a beautiful person inside and out. Now, as I mentioned, she was busy there for a while with her family raising children. And, of course, she still is a mom. But she has come out since in support of this movement. Now, when she speaks, people listen. I listen. And it was, I think, early on in the Woman, Life, Freedom movement that Nazanin was interviewed and was asked specifically her reaction to what is going on in Iran. And I want to play this soundbite. It's about 8 minutes long, but let me tell you, she has such great insight, and she's such a strong voice. So without further ado, I want you to hear Iranian-Canadian human rights activist Nazanin Afshin-Jam from last October.
Nazanin Afshin-Jam McKay is a human rights activist. Hi, Ms. Afshin-Jam. Very good to have you on our program this evening.
Very nice to see you, Vashi.
I appreciate you making the time. I wanted to start off by asking you about the fact that these protests are now entering a second month. I'm thinking back to 2019, when protests in Iran were kind of quelled much quicker, within almost a few weeks. What do you attribute to the persistence of these demonstrations?
Well, that's just it. It is very different, Vashi. This is a historical event. This is a grassroots, women-led revolution. It has never happened before in history, and we have to get it straight. This is not just because of Mahsa Amini. This has grown and expanded. This is no longer just Iran protest. This is Iran Revolution 2022. And it's because it expands all across the country. So it's in rural centers, urban centers. It's a cross-section of people and socioeconomic classes, people that have been wronged, ethnic minorities, young and old. I mean, we were seeing high school students chanting on the streets, asking for death to the dictator, down with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And it's different than previous protests. We're starting to see general strikes happen, including in oil refineries. And that was what brought down the Shah's government. So there's so much anger and frustration from 43 years of pent-up anger at what this regime has done to the people.
I can sort of see it in yourself too, just as you're talking. You're not distant from it. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. I mean, I was born there, of course. We left in 1979 when the revolution happened. My own father was tortured and imprisoned by the Revolutionary Guard. So, of course, this is personal. And I follow very closely what happens in Iran. I've been fighting for human rights for over 20 years.
What specifically are you hoping to see governments do in this part of the world that would aid in underpinning what you just laid out, that in making this more of a revolution than anything else?
Vashi, Iranians are chanting down with the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have very clear demands. They don't want reform. And they're expecting the international community to be by their side, including Canada. So I'm hoping Canada will form an alliance with G7 countries and come up with a plan not to recognize this illegitimate government that does not recognize the rights of the people and that does not represent the people. So that means not just don't cut off your hair. It means support the Iranians by cutting off your ties. What does that look like? That means closing your embassies, which we've already done, halting the Iran deal, that applies to the United States, not negotiating in any capacity. It means targeted sanctions, asset freezes, travel bans on regime officials, and it means putting pressure on the United Nations to do something. I mean, the United Nations has been completely quiet in this. There's been no resolutions, no emergency sessions, no commissions of inquiry. I mean, people are dying on the streets. There's been over 250 people that have died, including over 30 children. And so another way that Canada and Western countries can help is in the tech and communications sectors, because as you know, there's been huge internet blackouts. The regime doesn't want protesters to gather together, sharing information on where they want to protest. And they don't want the international community to see what's happening inside the country, the atrocities taking place.
I also wanted to just ask you where the U.S. is concerned. When you talk about, for example, breaking off or not engaging in negotiations for the nuclear deal, and I know that has been a big subject of debate in the United States as well, the counter position that the administration has offered is, you know, it's better to do so in hopes of them obviously not utilizing or not embarking on a nuclear program than not having any discussions at all. What is your response to that at this juncture, given what we're seeing unfold inside Iran?
Now, how would I answer this is that if they would support the people's movement towards a free and democratic Iran, we wouldn't have to worry about the nuclear question. I mean, the reason why it's a worry is because at this moment, the regime officials are fanatic, religious, tyrannical, theocratic regime that not only is not scared about the end of the earth and the question of nuclear issues, but they welcome it. They are Shiite fanatics who believe in the coming of the Mahdi, which is the 12th Imam, at a time of great destruction. So it's an irrational, unstable government. We would never want them to get hands on the nuclear issue. But if we support a free and democratic Iran, it'll be led by sound, good, freedom-loving people that want ties with the West, that are pro-Israel, that would not pose a threat. So they're gambling. You want to keep this regime, then continue negotiating with these regime officials, or do you want a fresh start with a pro-democratic country?
Do you think this movement will lead to regime change?
I honestly do. I believe this is a historical moment. I think that if the international community comes together and supports the people are doing all the hard work. We're just asking for support. The Iranians will do it. And this is a revolution. And if they have the support, then we will see a free Iran. If the community comes together like they had in South Africa, they had a racial apartheid in South Africa that the world galvanized around. In Iran, there's a gender apartheid. There's a religious apartheid. So I believe if the people around the world come together on these issues, then we can see freedom in Iran.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Ms. Afshin-Jam. Real pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Vashi.
Hi, I'm Vashi Capellos, host of Power in Politics. See more of our show by subscribing to the CBC News channel or click the link for another video.
Just an incredible lady, Nazanin Afshin-Jam. Her words are so powerful. what she just said there is so important. The international community cutting ties with doing business with Iran, and also joining in and supporting, because as Nazanin rightly said, the Iranian people, they're tough, they're brave, they're sacrificial. They just want us to support them. They will do the hard work of overturning this illegitimate, evil regime. They really can. Now, you may say, well, look, the Iran Revolutionary Guard, weapons and bullets, well, but still, look what happened to the Shah in 1978, and he was finally forced into exile. The same spirit is here on the other side for pro-democracy, for freedom, and they will stop at nothing to do what they need to do. When you see men and women together on the streets fighting against this tyrannical regime, then you know that it's just a matter of time. But the Biden administration and his policies, or its policies, are doing everything they can to support and empower and appease the mullahs. I can remember when President Trump, of course, was president and in office, he was a strong voice for the Iranian people, and he would go regularly to Twitter during these uprisings, and he would post things like this, quote, "To the brave and suffering Iranian people, I have stood with you since the beginning of my presidency, and my government will continue to stand with you. We are following your protests closely. Your courage is inspiring." You don't hear that from Biden. You don't hear that from any of those people involved with him. Another quote from President Trump: "The government of Iran must allow human rights groups to monitor and report the facts from the ground on the ongoing protests by the Iranian people. There cannot be another massacre of peaceful protesters, nor an internet shutdown. The world is watching." This was President Trump. You don't hear that from President Joe Biden. Instead, you have policies of appeasement. Now, just a couple of months ago, in the month of March, Senator Ted Cruz addressed the issues with the Biden administration appeasements, which also focus on the Iran deal. And he was taking this at a couple different angles, not only with the Iran nuclear talks to resume, but also with Biden's appeasement of Russia and allowing them to use weapons from Iran in the war against Ukraine. So this all ties into the appeasement policies of Biden. I want you to hear Senator Ted Cruz address this problem just a couple of months ago.
Hey, well, let's talk about how the war is going. And I know that you and I both agree that it is important for Russia to suffer a crushing defeat. Putin is a KGB thug, and he's committed to undermining our interests and our enemies across the globe, including in particular China, are watching carefully what happens in Ukraine. The Iranian regime is watching as well, and Iran is committed to doing everything they can to ensure Putin's victory. They're supplying Putin with resources, especially drones, which are devastating Ukrainian civilians and military assets. Meanwhile, the Biden administration, which waived the sanctions on Nord Stream 2, the last and best hope of preventing the war, right now today continues to be obsessed with a new nuclear deal with Iran. Iranian officials say talks remain ongoing, while administration officials say they remain committed to diplomacy, but not right now. I'm deeply concerned that this administration, even in the middle of a war, is subordinating the need to counter the Russian-Iranian alliance to its own partisan political preferences. For example, this administration has dropped the general UN arms embargo against Iran. This administration has made Russia our intermediary in nuclear talks with Iran. This administration has issued sanctions waivers, allowing the Ayatollah to become Putin's nuclear client. This administration has withheld weapons for Ukraine to target Iranian operatives in Crimea, helping Russia launch drones. And this administration has avoided using relevant sanctions authority against Iranian banks, facilitating the transfer of drones to Iran. As a result, Iran has been able to dramatically boost Putin's war in Ukraine. Meanwhile, America and the American taxpayer are shouldering the burden of assisting Ukraine, while the Biden administration is greasing both sides of this war. Let's talk about Iran's supply of drones to Russia. The Biden administration made an immediate decision to go to the United Nations and drop the general UN arms embargo on Iran because they say it was required by the original JCPOA nuclear deal. Biden officials say part of the embargo dealing with drones is still in place, but even that measure will expire this fall pursuant to the JCPPA. I believe the Biden administration should immediately go to the UN, invoke our snapback authority, and keep the embargo in place. Do you agree, or do you believe we should allow the UN arms embargo on Iran to expire and allow Iranian drones to continue to go to Russia and be used against the people of Ukraine?
Time of the senator has expired, but please answer his question.
Thank you. Senator Cruz, you are absolutely right that Iranian drones are fueling this war, and that is why we have taken many increased sanctions measures against Iran over the last couple of months, including against the IRGC Guard Corps Aerospace Force, the Quds Force Aviation Industry, the Shahid Aviation Industry, Russian Aerospace Forces.
Have you stopped the drones?
We have not stopped the drones, and this is part of the problem. But we know what Iran looks like, and we also know who Russia's friends are, Iran, North Korea, and Hamas. As you know, we are not currently in active discussions with Iran. You know, it is not prepared to take these negotiations seriously right now, and we have many of the same concerns that you have, but I look forward to speaking with you in a separate setting about our larger strategy vis-a-vis Iran. I think this is probably not the appropriate setting.
Well, Senator Ted Cruz, to his credit, is confronting this administration with the way that the Iranian regime is supplying drones to Russia to fuel this war against Ukraine. And, of course, because of his lack of getting involved and putting an end to the drone and doing something about the embargo and et cetera, the Biden administration appeasement of the mullahs is not only empowering them against their own people, against the protesters, but it's also empowering Russia in its war against Ukraine. The evil alliance of Iran, Russia, and China is still very strong. And, of course, you know why the Biden administration won't say anything against China, because of Hunter Biden and his continuous deals when he was vice president that made it possible for China to be given favors for money, quid pro, however you say that word. The point is this. The people of Iran and the people of Ukraine suffer daily because of the Biden administration appeasement policies. I want to go into more depth about this, and I consulted an article from the Gatestone Institute. It's an international policy council, very good insights, conservative articles. And there was an article written back just a few days ago by Majid Ravizadeh, and the title of it is Iran's Nuclear Program, Does the Biden Administration Have a Policy? Now, that is the million-dollar question that we've been trying to answer and point out, really, that they don't. The Biden administration's reluctance to enforce existing sanctions on Iran, which, of course, is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, it looks suspiciously when they don't enforce them like total appeasement of Iran's ruling mullahs. Remember what Nazanin said. They don't speak up. That is the Biden administration. Don't speak up for human rights and support the people of Iran. They don't do that. And the appeasement goes on. This is what Barack Obama did when he was president. Had this historic deal, you remember, and billions of dollars of sanction relief money was made available to the people. No, not to the people of Iran. What am I saying? To the government of Iran, which could care less about the people of Iran, and all of that money, and even John Kerry said that he knew that some of that money is going to finance their terrorism activities all over the world. Well, he was absolutely right. That's what they did with the sanction relief money. Obama was the great appeaser. Of course, Biden was vice president at that time. And now Biden, as president, is following in the footsteps of Obama and is continuing his appeasement policies in Iran. And since 2021, the Biden administration has been cozying up to Iran in a way that is so embarrassing. Like I said, it goes back to the 2015 JCPOA nuclear deal of the Obama administration. Now, in Israel, on May 22nd, U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Thomas Nides, was asked, quote, "Can Israel attack Iran without the U.S.? What about the lack of meetings between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu?" Here's what Thomas Nides said. "The coordination between Israel and U.S. vis-a-vis our mutual enemies, our common threats in the regions, is rock solid. One of the things President Biden assured both Prime Minister Biden and Lapid and Netanyahu was that there would be complete transparency regarding coordination on Iran." And it's not just Iran, it's proxies. "We stand here to support Israel and work with it to make sure Iran never attains a nuclear weapon." That's from U.S. Ambassador to Israel Thomas Nides. The problem is, can we believe him? Because the Biden administration's lack of strategy toward this regime, it became evident during the recent briefing about Iran that really has disappointed the senators. Now, according to Senator Josh Hawley on this same subject, based on what I heard, they really don't have much to say on the topic, that is Iran. "And I didn't think it was a particularly useful briefing. I don't know if they really have a coherent strategy. If there is one, I didn't hear it." They don't have a strategy. Not anything. Senator Jim Risch, "It's been over 6 months since President Biden declared the JCPO deal dead, right? And we're still no closer to a more comprehensive Iran policy. Strategic ambiguity on Iran policy only serves to embolden the regime and push our partners close to China." Now, not only has the Biden administration abandoned the maximum pressure policy on the mullahs ever since he assumed office, what has been the response of Iran without this pressure? Iran has been freely enriching uranium levels to just short of nuclear breakout, levels not needed for peaceful nuclear technology. We know that's the case. And it violates the whole sanctions. And, of course, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, as you heard with Senator Ted Cruz, Iran has become a major weapons smuggler and exporter to the aggressors. Russia has depleted the supply of attack drones previously bought from Iran, and they're going to purchase some more. Now, according to White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, Iran also continues to provide Russia with one-way attack UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. Since August, Iran has provided Russia with more than 400 UAVs, primarily of the Shahid variety. The Biden administration is also not putting any pressure on the European Union to stop its trading with Iran. the value of Iran's export to the European Union's member states rose 28% last year. So Iran has exported commodities worth about $799 million to the European Union in a nine-month period of this year. Iran's increasing trade with and exports to the UAE are also increasing the regime's revenues and assisting it to supply, what, more weapons to Russia. And they are praising and have praised Russia's decision to send troops into Ukraine. They've supplied large quantities of bullets, rockets, and mortar shells to Russia. And, of course, Moscow paid for the ammunition in cash. And in all of the things that are going on, Iran is now producing more oil. It's selling it at levels close to pre-sanctions eras to countries such as China, which desperately needs more oil, while the Biden administration suspended new oil and gas leases on public lands and waters here. The Biden administration's policies of appeasement are directly energizing this Iranian regime. It is an ongoing problem. A quote from Winston Churchill in warning against appeasing aggressors, quote, "Each one hopes that if he feeds the crocodile enough, the crocodile will eat him last. All of them hope that the storm will pass before their turn comes to be devoured. But I fear greatly the storm will not pass. It will rage and it will roar. Ever more loudly, ever more widely, it will spread to the south. It will spread to the north." And, of course, remember Chamberlain and Hitler. Think back to that peaceful appeasement pact. How did that work out? This is an article by Dr. Majid Ravizadeh. He's a business strategist and advisor, Harvard-educated scholar, political scientist, board member of Harvard International Review, president of the International American Council on the Middle East. He has authored several books on Islam and U.S. foreign policy, and I thank him for this very insightful article featured in the Gatestone Institute. It shows that this administration and their lack of putting any pressure on Iran, their lack of completely quelling any nuclear talks in the future with the mullahs, their lack of stopping this continuous trade and the Iranian regime, you know, working with European unions and making money with arms sales and such. Because this administration does not have a policy to support the people of Iran and stop this militant Islamic government, because of that, it's empowering them every day and in every way. And again, we need to support the people of Iran. We need to stand by them. Our government needs to be like President Trump, who got on Twitter and assured the people of Iran and the Iranian Americans that live here that his administration is monitoring the protests and are going to stand by the people of Iran for their human rights. We need a leader like that, and hopefully and prayerfully, if President Trump becomes the nominee in 2024, and should he win this time and become president, I know and I believe that we will have a president that will not only rescue us from this liberal socialist utopia that they're trying to create, but he will be a strong supporter once again of the Iranian regime. He will be a strong supporter once again of the people of Iran who are fighting against this corrupt and evil Iranian regime. It's actually the other way around that Freudian slip. It's the Biden administration that is a supporter in many ways of this evil, corrupt regime. I want to end the program today on a good note. There is a worship artist, Sean Fuchs, that has been busy traveling all over the United States and going to states' capitals and having religious worship rallies and praying for the governments, for the individual states and their governments, and praying for our nation in the crisis that we're in. And he is a powerful, powerful, strong representative for that. I want you to hear Sean Fuchs. This is a song from his latest CD on his Kingdom to the Capital movement. We need someone like this to pray for our nation and to pray for God to intervene. This is a song by him called Liberty Bells. Let's listen.
Come on, put your hands together like this. Come on, there we go. Come on, how many can hear the Liberty Bells ringing over Washington, D.C.? Come on. Come on, sing this with me, with everything you got.
Sound of freedom, it's the sound of heaven coming.
That is powerful, powerful worship music from the Kingdom to Capitol tour that Sean Fuch is presently involved in. He was here. It was last month, I believe, at Jefferson City. It was really a unique, powerful event. I wish I could have been there in person. I watched it online. He is an artist, but he is also a very strong activist. And, of course, everything that he has done is based on that prayer from 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by thy name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. He is asking us, regardless of our political persuasion, to come when he comes to these capital cities and just bring people there. And other Christians would come and gather and kneel and pray at the capitals and ask for God to intervene, for there to be revival. And I believe so strongly in this. And I think of the freedom he's talking about. And that is exactly the people of Iran. They want that exact kind of freedom, to be able to go to their capitals, if you will, and to stand up without fear of arrest and murder and persecution and be able to say what's on their mind. That's what the people of Iran want, what Sean Fuch is able to do right here in the United States without being arrested, persecuted, murdered. But of course, our government doesn't like when we stand up and demand our freedoms, when we stand up and say this is wrong. They don't like that. They are against our freedom of speech. So today we have learned that there are voices that support the people of Iran, Nazanin Afshinjam. And we've also seen how this administration has no policy on Iran, and even in the future would consider nuclear talks once again, maybe not at this time, and how they're helping Iran supply arms to Russia by not speaking out, by not having a policy, but by being so busy appeasing them. When are we going to grow a backbone? When are we going to stand up and say enough is enough? The people of Iran are dying on the streets every day, and they need our voices. They need our support. But like Sean Fuch, we come together and we pray not only for our nation at the Capitol, but we pray for the people of Iran that God will lead them in triumph and help them through this crisis. I want to say thank you so much for joining me today on the broadcast. Thank you for listening. I'll be back on board on Monday, June 5th, for another Cross in the Desert. And I appreciate you taking the time out today to join me. Continue to pray for the success of the people of Iran to one day have that freedom like Sean Fuch to speak out and go to their capital and say this is enough. God bless you. I will see you again on Monday.